quick one before we start. You know what's a fun surprise? Getting to your child's school meeting completely unprepared because nobody tells you what to ask. I've got guides for that. School advocacy, NDIS, meltdowns, diagnosis, medications, all there, www.adhdmums.com.au/resources. Paid ones, free ones, all there for ADHD mums. Okay, let's get on with it. Welcome to ADHD Mums. If you've ever offered to grab bread and seriously consider taking the long way home, not lost, just unavailable. If you keep everything running whilst quietly running on empty yourself, this is the podcast for you. No pep talks, no push through, just honesty. I'm Jane, let's get into it.
Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Sarah is back and she's from See Beyond. Sarah is working in the school system in Queensland every day. And when I read her listener question, that's just like a Tuesday, a Wednesday. She's almost desensitized to how bad it is. It's a pleasure to have you here because often it's hard to know, is it just me? Is it everyone? Is it the system? And you having that larger, broader experience is so important.
Yeah. Thanks, Jane, so much for having me back. I'm excited to dive in.
Awesome. Okay. Last episode we did all about being reasonable, asking nicely, working collaboratively, and expecting it to be okay and going in fairly positively. I think we can manage this. We just need to ask for a few things or a few changes, or this is what is happening. How can we work together? This episode is about we've tried that, been there, done that. We need to take this up a notch. When something lands on a principal's desk, because we all know that you're supposed to go to the classroom teacher first and it gets escalated as needed from there. If you've escalated it to the principal or the teacher has escalated it to the principal, how do we get the principal to look at it?
Great question. And people listening last episode were probably like, oh, why does she keep saying it depends? I'm going to answer it the same way. It depends. It depends on the principal. It depends on their approach, how hands-on they are. Some principals delegate to head of inclusion, deputy principals. It depends on their skill set with inclusion and understanding the ins and outs of disability rights and what kids can and should be getting. All of those create this sort of big picture for how the principal's likely to respond. If it reaches the principal step, as a parent, I would tell parents 100% of the time to expect the principal to back their staff no matter what has happened. Unequivocally, to your face, they will back their staff. They might behind the scenes do other things and take other action, but they will not admit that to you, and they will not make it obvious that's what's happening. So a few things that should draw their attention would be if staff are putting their hands on children in inappropriate ways in terms of a restraint, or what might be called a safety issue. Issues like that should definitely be reviewed by the principal, and they should be aware of those things happening and always put it in writing. I wouldn't try to call the principal. I might try to set a meeting, but I always start with doing it in writing so the principal has time to read it and digest it. It can be helpful to have, I would like to hear back from this, and give them a deadline. I think a week is a fair deadline for principals to respond. They are unlikely to respond in writing. They are likely to call and respond via a phone call if they are responding. If a principal calls a parent, I would tell the parent to take notes of the phone call, reflect it back via email. Hi, Thomas, thanks for your phone call. I appreciate your attention to this matter. Here's my takeaway from the conversation. Just wanted to make sure I've captured everything. Can you verify if I've missed anything so I can add it to my notes? Then you've created a paper trail and you're more likely to have more interaction with the principal than just a phone call and they think it's done. They know you're invested. They know you're in it to win it. not win anything, just proverbially.
I know what you mean. Like, you're not going to let it go.
Yes.
You're not just going to go, oh, thanks for that. And then you forget. And then.
Yes.
Yeah, so you're going to be taken more seriously.
Definitely.
Okay. So now we're talking documents and we're talking about moving from asking nicely. How important is documents when we're talking about getting a school to prioritize something that you're asking for?
I think it's so important because it gives that same message that you've just given to the principal. If you've done the phone call, taken notes, sent it back. I always ask for documents as my first point of contact with a school. Could you send through the personal learning plan, the behavior support, whatever they have, and the incident reports so that I can wrap my head around if there's behavior problems at school, not just for every kid, to wrap my head around what's happening and what they have documented. They need documents as evidence of adjustments that they're making so they get funding, which that is a different episode and a different conversation because it's lacking and there's not an internal audit process that is effective and blah, blah, blah. They need behavior incidents recorded so they can track behaviors and look for trends. Because if little Noah is losing the plot every single day during English at the same, maybe not at the same time, but where the teacher has English in the timetable, that tells me there's probably a problem in English with the way Noah's engaging with that type of learning.
Mm, or maybe he doesn't have lunch.
Right.
And he's hungry. I don't know. Like, it's a pattern. It's a great point.
And so if we can narrow down the patterns of behavior, we can look at why it's happening. And we can look at adjustments to put in place around that. Even for kids now, it's so hot in Queensland. Some kids are freaking out because they can't cool their bodies down. Mm-hmm. So they come in from break and can't cool back down. And middle and afternoon sessions are a nightmare because they're so escalated internally, they can't regulate. They can't self-regulate. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have those patterns, it's impossible to know what's happening. I also like documentation. Because I can then read what the school is doing and what the school has in place.
Yeah. And it's not then an emotional story from a parent with not knowing the concrete things. Like, yes. I think in September they said this, but it.
Yeah.
But you don't know.
Yes. It's just recorded. It's there. I can read through. Sometimes I print them out, the school's documents. I print them out and I make notes on them for myself. Take those to meetings. Ask about the things that I've notated. And it's easier to get more specific answers that way than generalized conversations.
Okay. So basically, no matter how small something is, you think just maybe open your notes on your phone, quick notes, because you've got to prepare that it's not going to improve. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I think my mom says to me a lot, you should have been a lawyer, which I don't want to be a lawyer. But I seem to naturally have that mindset where I need to collect this evidence. I need to make sure I have a paper trail. I need to see what information is here in case later I need to refer back to it for any reason.
I think you and I are a little bit similar. I call it forecasting the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So as soon as something happens in any areas that involve my children mainly, I'm always like, I am going to document this because I don't know what will happen later.
Yes.
Like, it seems like a very small thing, but if you worst case that forward plan it, you're going to need that information. So now I collect it all and it takes me a few minutes regardless. And I've actually needed it more often than not, even about very small things,
Which
it's sad that I feel like I have to do that. But
yes.
Then you're in a better position than later on when you're like, but this has been happening for months, but you don't really know when.
And where do you start? And then you're trying to comb back through all your emails and you're trying to catalog them. That is very overwhelming. And if you can do it on the fly in real time, that's going to help down the track from that overwhelm that you might experience as a parent when you're in the thick of things and trying to stay in your logical, rational mind and organize information. It's already done.
Oh, completely. Or you print it out from the notes on your phone, you take it to the meeting at school, whatever it is, or you send it to someone like yourself who can actually help. Do you think, or what is the difference between a verbal conversation on the phone versus written requests? Like, when do you do both or either?
Great question. I think it depends on your relationship with the person you're speaking to. If you have a trusted relationship, whether it's the class teacher, inclusion teacher, head of inclusion, deputy principal, and they speak to you and they action that, the verbal conversation is enough for me. If they're actioning the things, amazing. If they are not, and not right, like I never expect anyone, oh, we just talked about this, half an hour later, it should be sorted out. No, I give them days, give them a week, depending on what it is. If that is not happening, then I put it in writing. And I often cite, per our conversation, is this still happening? Can you update me on the status? Can you give me more information about where we are in this process?
Yeah, I think that's great. One thing that just jumped into my head is, if you wanted to record it and they were doing a great job, maybe you could write them an email and say, thanks for doing a great job. I know we spoke about this. This is what you did. So then it's like you've documented it if the teacher changes or yes, something like that. Then it's not like you're recording them and they're doing it and then it feels a bit icky.
Yes.
Okay. And then written obviously is when you're thinking, let's create a paper trail because I'm asking for a very simple thing. My child is this, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Okay. So then let's say you've done the verbal, you've done the written, you've been reasonable, you're starting to escalate with your documents, right? You're getting your stuff together. Nothing's happening still. What is the right way, or if there is a right way, to escalate inside a school to start with?
So within the school, I often tell parents to contact the class teacher and the inclusion teacher in the same email. And some schools are like, oh, contact the class teacher, they're your first point of call. Okay, yeah, but most kids don't have an inclusion teacher. And that's why I say include that person too. From there, if you're not getting what you need to, then I would look at emailing the head of inclusion and or the deputy for that grade level. Sometimes there's a deputy for inclusion across the whole school. I would look at contacting those people and asking for a meeting. And they can invite the teacher, the class and inclusion, as well as anyone else, the guidance officer, the speechy, they can decide who they want at the meeting. I find that to help to, if your problem at the teacher level isn't getting resolved, it can often be resolved at that level. If that still isn't being resolved, then I would ask for a more formal meeting with the principal. And again, the principal might invite all of these parties to the meeting, but one where you can share your concerns and express what has been happening and that you're trying to resolve it. If that does not get resolved, I would make a formal complaint in writing in an email with the subject formal complaint to the principal.
Okay.
Document everything, capture it all, and give a brief history of what's happened, what you believe the violation or the problems are, and then how you would like it resolved. That's what I would do just within the school.
And then I suppose the principal has two choices, or how do they receive that? What are their paths forward from there?
So principals have to respond to formal complaints. If they receive it, and that's why I'm very clear that it's a formal complaint, so they don't think it's just parents airing their grievances.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a complaint, so I didn't know,
Exactly. And they should be looking to resolve it at the school level. If they don't, or if it's unsatisfactory in terms of your perspective as a parent, you can escalate it to region. Region, if you don't try that process first, region's likely to kick it back to the principal.
Yes. Okay. I've experienced this. This makes sense. Yes.
So you can go to region. Region is unlikely to say, yes, this is a problem. We notice this is a problem. We're fixing it. They're likely to say, your complaint has not been substantiated. We found no evidence of this.
Yes, I've experienced that too.
And go talk to the school and look at what's happening at the school level and potentially make some changes there. They won't admit anything happened because that opens them up for liability.
Can we go back one step? So let's say principal opens formal complaint. They go, there's a formal complaint that breaks disability standards. This child needs to have a 5-minute break once a day and it's not happening. What are their choices there? To talk to the people and make it happen? Or do they care?
Depends.
Just depends on the people, the relationships, the situation.
Depends too. And I see this a lot in the Education Queensland system. There are principals in schools who do not have the leadership capabilities needed to run a school and to be in charge of adults. They might be good at the kid type stuff and the budget management, but they're not good at managing the humans who work in their school. So I see that there's a couple principals I've worked for who that is the problem, and where things aren't getting resolved because the principals aren't effective at that, which is why I say it depends, because there's so many options of what could be happening. Ideally, though, the principal goes to the inclusion teacher or the head of inclusion or the deputy. Sometimes the principal will just speak to the deputy, and then the deputy goes down the line and manages it. But they should be able to resolve most issues at the school.
Okay. And it depends on the relationships as to whether the principal's, I'm going to make sure I fix this or sort this out, or, and I don't want it to go to regional, or whether their attitude is like, take it there, I don't really care, or whatever, see how you go. Okay, and then it comes into regional, and you said they're unlikely to acknowledge anything has happened or anything and just say it's fine.
Yes.
Okay, and then what do you do from there? Because a lot of neurodivergent people like the acknowledgement. All of the social justice warrior mothers, there's a lot of us out there, probably a heavy amount on this podcast because I'm a social justice nightmare to people. So then when the regional have it and say, oh, it's not an issue, go back down to the school level, what are your choices? Because they're not acknowledging there's a problem. So you're trying to figure out, are they doing anything or not?
Your choices are a little bit limited because you can keep putting complaints in, but they're not going to go anywhere. I'm working with a family where this is the case right now. At the most basic level, they're trying to talk to the principal about things. And she's saying, I'm not talking to you about this contact region. They contact region and say, we've been told to contact you about this. And they're saying, no, you have to talk to the principal. And then they get back to the principal and she says, oh, sure, we can have a meeting. I never said that we couldn't talk.
That stuff keeps me awake at night. Because you feel really gaslit. Like,
it is. It is. This stuff raises my blood pressure so much. My face, I don't know if you can even see on the video right now. My face is like hot because it makes me irate. Absolutely irate.
This is how I feel. I just get so angry at the stupidity, the inefficiency, the fact that it feels like everyone's lying and I'm being gaslit. And then I'm like to my husband, I swear she said that you were there, weren't you?
Yeah.
And because you feel like you're going quietly insane.
Yes.
And then at the same time, it feels like they're pointing at you like you are the insane person. No one else has a problem. Then I start to think, is it me?
Then you gaslight yourself.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a classic. I'm not calling anyone specifically a narcissist. It's a classic narcissism tactic.
But when they all band together,
the system,
and you're on your own,
the system is narcissistic in its tendencies.
Good. Okay, so then, because this is the loop that I think people are going to listen to this series, right? Is like that kind of insanity where you think, surely. And then especially if you have a friend who's a parent, they're like, oh, I've had no problem with that because maybe their experience is different.
Yes.
And then you think, it is me. So then I've been to this position with regional a couple of times and I've had them say to me, go back down to the school level. They said no two or three times. So then I said to them, I know that if I submit new evidence, you have to reconsider it. I have submitted new evidence again for the third time. You need to review this. And then I back them into a corner. Like, are you saying this and this? Because if you are, this here is impacting in this way and I'm going to take this further. And I got them to review it. There, of course, regional review came back with everything's fine.
Yes.
But yet there seems to be a lot happening behind the scenes. Where I'm left though is there are changes happening behind the scenes. I can see the changes. And a lot of the things are what I've asked for. Like, for example, it's school-based incident reports, tracking properly, one school, actually doing individual plans for kids who have NCCD funding. Very basic. I didn't ask for that for my child only. I asked for that because it is a gaping hole. Looks to me from what I've seen that things have changed and things are moving. But where I'm left is so tricky because they want to have a stakeholder meeting about the recommendations from the internal review. Obviously, I don't agree with the recommendations because they're based off incorrect information that they've just blatantly made up.
Yes.
I have all of the information from exactly that time with records of, and they have gone off things that cannot possibly be accurate, factually, not even opinion, factually. And then they want to deliver those recommendations to me in person in a stakeholder meeting with about five different people. And I don't know if I can go into that meeting and just take it, because that's what I think the path to not removing my kids from that environment is, to sit there and take it and smile and nod. And if they even poke me the wrong way, I'll blow up because of not even the situation, because of the stupidity, the inefficiency, the blatant bullshit that's gone on. And so now I'm left where I emailed the principal yesterday and said, I just want to move forward with the class teacher because I've got no interest in pursuing it because I can see the changes have been made. No one's acknowledged shit, which would go a long way. But I can see the changes are there. Do I want to fight the school for and make their life really hard? No, I don't, because they're doing it, even though they're not acknowledging it. But now they're ramming the bullshit down my throat and it riles me right up because I don't want to take it further because I'm seeing the changes. What do you do in that situation?
There's so many parents that get stuck like this and they make it similar. They make a complaint to Region. Region wants to meet to talk through the complaint. They never contact the parent for more information, just what's in the complaint, and then meet for the outcome, or they don't even try to meet. They just send a letter.
Yeah, I've got the letters, yeah.
So they do the letters. I think if you have, and this is for any parents who have capacity to attend, I would attend to, again, this is zooming out and looking at what could be down the track to show that you participated in good faith in the process that the department was attempting to go through, and just bite your tongue and essentially take it on the chin and go through the meeting.
Okay.
From the meeting, you have the Ombudsman as an option. You have Queensland Human Rights Commission. You have Australian Human Rights Commission.
So you have to attend the delivery of the recommendations from Region.
I would, okay, to show that you attended, that you weren't doing like, this is not an Australian reference, but I don't have one, Custer's Last Stand, where you're like, digging in, I'm not doing this, I'm going to be here.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah. Because I've just got the shits.
Which is understandable because you get so fatigued from the process and the gaslighting. But if I think it's smarter, and I'm not a lawyer, like I'm a teacher by trade, but strategically, I think it's smarter to go to the meeting, show that you attended, show that you listened to what they have to say, that you accepted the document, and then go from there.
So you suppose you have to finish off the process properly before you start another one?
I would.
Okay.
To keep it cleaner and to make it less ambiguous and to decrease the chance of the next system shutting you down.
Okay. Okay. There's a little bit of each shit in there, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you would take notes and then email them through.
Yes. They should, at a meeting that's at that level, there should be someone taking notes. If I rocked up, I would ask, who's note taking today? I would take my own as well, but I take mine by hand. I don't like typing mine because I read my own handwriting. Why would I type them? Force them essentially to, they've typed them, send them to you. You can look at anything they've missed and inject things as needed.
Okay.
That's
okay.
How I would do it.
Okay. So you go up to regional. You probably won't get a response or any admission that there was anything ever.
Correct.
But you might see the changes happen.
Yep.
So actually that could be helpful. You just got to make peace with the fact that there's no apology. There's no admission of anything.
There's no apology ever.
I might have to just stop standing waiting for an apology because yeah. I'm like, I need someone to give me an apology.
No.
Okay.
You can wait. I'm not telling you what to do, but they're not going to give you one.
I think if you're taking responsibility for your own life, you wouldn't wait for some random person to give you an apology, right?
You're
who am I waiting for? Exactly. Okay. So let's say internal review happens. You don't see any improvement. Nothing happens. And then it all continues.
I want to clarify something because you've done an internal review.
Correct.
The internal review looks at the
mechanisms within the department and region for how your complaint was managed. It is not looking at the merits and facts of your complaint. It's only looking at, did the department follow the right steps when they received your complaint?
Ah, so then what is the next step from there?
I would do regional complaint. Wait for them to send you, this sounds very jaded, but this is what happens. Wait for them to send you back the letter saying that your complaint is unsubstantiated.
Yep.
I'm going to back up for a second. When you make your complaint to region, make sure you get a complaint number.
Yep. Okay.
I've had multiple parents submit complaints, never get a complaint number, and nothing happens. It disappears into this abyss.
Oh my God. And then it's another thing we could remember and follow up.
So make sure that you are getting the number. It should be a letter number code. I don't know how long it is. It's like a long one. It's not just like a license plate number. You should get that and get your letter back. Oh, everything's fine at school. We didn't find any issues. Okay, great. There are, but fine. Choices then become Ombudsman, Australian Human Rights Commission, Queensland, or whatever your state human rights commission is, state or territory. And this is, I haven't looked at the other states other than Queensland because I haven't needed to yet. I do need to look at New South Wales, but I haven't gotten there. The Ombudsman will look at the procedures followed and what the department's response was. And essentially, like that internal review, did they go through the correct steps? The Human Rights Commissions will look at, was this child's rights violated? And they'll look more at the, probably the meat of your complaint, because most parents are making complaints because their kids' rights have been violated. They can find that your kids' rights have been violated and make suggestions that the school system should take on. They cannot enforce those, but they can make them. I went to the Australian Human Rights Commission conciliation process with one of my clients. I did not do her paperwork to prepare to go there. She hired a lawyer to do that, but I went with her to it. And this poor conciliator, I probably asked her 1,000 questions about the process and how it works and what to expect. She said state schools will sometimes come, sometimes not. When they come, they will agree to nothing. They won't agree to an apology letter. They won't agree to remove something from a kid's behavior incident record. They won't agree to financial compensation that other families from private schools are getting. They agree to nothing. Oh. They stonewall at the process. So they show up. Oh, yeah, we came. We came to conciliation.
But we're not doing any of that.
And won't do any of it.
The poor parent. He's come through so much shit to get there.
I know.
And then they know from the beginning that they're not going to do anything when they get there.
Yeah. So I think I want parents to know, though, that's the case.
Yes. And
so
not to
they
expect.
Don't go in thinking that something is going to happen or that it will be nice.
Yes. I was expecting with the review that someone was going to say, hey, I think we stuffed up a bit there.
No, never. So after Australian Human Rights Commission, your next step, if you want to go beyond that, is federal court.
Shit.
And then you have to have a barrister, not just a solicitor.
Shit.
So you have to be like a bazillionaire and have like your own mine or something if you're going to do that. The Queensland Human Rights Commission, the next step is QCAT.
QCAT?
Yes.
Okay, for anyone who's not in Queensland, let's just explain what QCAT is. It's Queensland Commission Administrative Tribunal. I didn't think they would have got involved in there. I thought it was like small claims.
No, they will get involved in it because you have gone to Queensland Human Rights Commission. You have not had the outcome you were seeking. And essentially, it's like appealing to them. The process is very legal based. I did help a parent prepare their document and complaint for QCAT. They were referred by the Queensland Human Rights Commission to QCAT for resolution as the next step.
Wow. For anyone listening, I'm going to put something in the show notes around what would be the equivalent of QCAT. So there would be something.
Yep.
So if you missed it, it's the Queensland Commission Administrative Tribunal. I just thought it was a small claims court. So for example, I thought it was like my neighbor's fence is half broken down and I want to replace it, you can't agree, then you go to a small claims court. So what would an example be when you did the QCAT process? Because at that point, you would have gone to the school, you've gone to regional, you've gone to the ombudsman, you've gone to the Human Rights Commission.
I would not go to the ombudsman in that the ombudsman would be a separate track.
Okay, so what are the tracks? Tell me the step, the options.
Beyond region, three tracks. Ombudsman track, Queensland Human Rights track, Australian Human Rights track.
Okay.
Ombudsman track, I don't know if anything exists beyond the ombudsman. I haven't looked at it. I don't fully understand Australian government structures innately. Despite being here for 10 years, I don't know what's beyond the ombudsman. It could be the Wizard of Oz. I don't know. It
probably is federal court.
Yeah.
To be honest, because I don't think in the pathway I looked at, there was much above ombudsman.
Yep. Queensland Human Rights Path can go to QCAT. Australian Human Rights Commission goes to federal court.
Okay. So what would be an example? Like, because you would probably see a lot of people going to regional review, right? Heaps. I would imagine heaps. And then who would be left? Let's say you've got 100 complaints. You're probably taking how many of 100 to regional review? 100? 90?
Probably, I would send all of them to regional.
100, yeah. That's what I was thinking. So you get a complaint, it's not managed at the school. If it's coming to you, it's probably going to go to regional.
Yes.
What percentage out of that finishes up and doesn't go elsewhere?
95.
95?
Because the parents are so burnt out. They're often neurodivergent themselves.
They're done.
They're at wit's end. They're perimenopausal moms. They have just gotten their own diagnosis.
Oh, totally. And then plus you're driven insane by this stupidity too.
You haven't slept for years because this is happening.
Yeah.
And you've realized nothing is going to change at the school and you have to find a new school. And then you have to talk to the new school at the intake meeting. And be really upfront about what's happening with your kid.
Oh, yeah.
Hope they'll take your kid. Yeah.
And hope that they don't think, oh, that's that parent.
Yes.
That sucks.
Yes.
And being in that situation, you also need to disclose what you're looking for clearly, because if they can't do it, you don't want to go there.
Yes.
You also have to come across not insane.
Yes.
Even though you're so emotional.
Yes.
Okay. So could you give me a few examples of what would drive someone out of a school? What would be a good resolution? What are some things you're seeing?
I see everything. So there's some things that are so crushing to me, where restrictive practices are being used inappropriately and
keeping a child in a room and locking them inside. Like what?
Yes. Keeping a child in a room, locking them inside, making a child at special school sit on a red square when they squeal, but they're squealing because you're not using their AC device or giving them access for communication. So they're squealing to communicate and then you're punishing them on the red square. You might be walking into the classroom where the teacher has called you as the deputy because a kid is sitting in her chair and you snatch the kid physically up out of the chair and remove them from the room physically.
Jesus.
There might be a child who is destroying a classroom and you as the principal have grabbed them under their armpits and lifted them up and another staff member has grabbed their legs and you're carrying them like that out of the classroom. Those are some of the most extreme things that I have seen where parents have left. But those are like really big safety things. Those are outside the scope of restrictive practices. Those are outside the scope of ensuring the safety of others. Kids can destroy, I'm not saying they should, they can destroy a room and not be restrained. They can damage property and not be restrained. The threshold for restraint, whether it's documented or not, is posing a harm to themselves or others. Imminent harm.
Yeah.
Not like they've thrown a pencil at you.
Yeah.
And you're now restraining them.
So the people at regional review, I would imagine, are wanting to stay at the school because otherwise you would leave. Or do they want to go to regional review and they've already left? Or both?
A mix.
Mix.
Some kids, especially where there's like custody stuff happening, some kids have to stay at the school. Leaving is not an option. And then we get into school can't.
Yeah. Okay.
And some parents want to stay because this is the fourth school their kid has gone to and they're in year two.
Yeah.
Some parents want to stay because it's year six
and they're just trying to make it through year six. Yeah,
because before they have a fight with the new high school. Let's just keep going with the one we've got rather than try.
Yes.
Okay, so then what kind of people are then going beyond regional review? If you're talking ombudsman, human rights, are they the people that are still there, still looking for change, or they're just like, I need something to happen here. That's not okay.
The mom I went with to the Australian Human Rights Commission, it was a private school. They ended up leaving the school way before any of the process started, just because of the emotional toll and mental toll it was taking on the kid.
Yeah.
Which I think is really common, and some parents have to pull their kids because of that. The family going to QCAT, they were expelled from their school,
okay,
which is part of the complaint.
Yep.
And if you get expelled from a school and you're in Ed Queensland, region finds you a new school to attend. So the kid is at a new school now.
Okay. So if a child's expelled, I always wondered that with catchments. In Queensland, they're pretty heavy on the catchments. I think they are everywhere. I always wondered that. So if you have a child in catchment, can they be expelled?
Yeah.
They can be.
Yeah.
And then what happens though, because don't they have the right to an education? I'm a bit confused where they go.
So there's this regional liaison officer who essentially finds a new school for your kid to attend, and that school has to take your kid out of catchment. And your child stays enrolled. You can appeal expulsion. Your child stays enrolled at the catchment or base school until the appeal process is resolved.
Okay. So then let's say you have a child, they live in catchment area A, they are then expelled. Regional goes, okay, they're expelled from their own catchment. Then we have to find another school. But wouldn't the school say no? Because generally they already have their own children that they need.
If you just went as, I don't know your kid's name, Jane Lachlan's mom, to the school and said, this is the case, the school would be like, oh, sorry, we're full. But when region says, you need to enroll this kid, we have to provide them with an education, then they have to take them.
And if their behavior was like that in their catchment school that created an expulsion, then is there anybody that helps with the behavior? Or do they just take the same child and just try it in a new environment?
They take the same child and try it in a new environment. The expulsions that I've seen, I've only seen three, and this is in years. One boy was a high schooler, a bunch of trauma, also had developmental language disorder, also had ADHD, also was in a gang, and so very high risk for drug use, alcohol, running the streets, weapons, if he wasn't at school.
Yep.
He wore a hoodie under his school uniform and had his hood. It was like the coldest days of winter. Had his hood tucked in. The principal approached him and he got very defensive. He felt like she was on his case. He swore at her and told her to F off. He got expelled for that. That was his first behavior incident of the year. And
seems pretty
extreme.
Quick.
Yeah. So the regional people came and found a new high school for him to go to, but the mom put him into an alternative like flexi school in the meantime because she knew that the state system wasn't going to be suited for her kid and that just switching schools wouldn't address what was happening for him. The other expulsions are somewhat new and still pending. So I don't have information or updates. But it is a conversation I have with the parents. Look, we might need, and I talk to parents about this a lot when we're looking at complaints and plant in their minds, if we can't resolve this, we might need to look at different school options.
Okay. Okay. And then the threshold for what is expelled and what is suspended is purely on the principal's discretion.
100% principal discretion.
Because you see inconsistencies as a parent all the time, right?
Yes. And it's supposed to be a last resort.
Yeah.
Everything else is supposed to be done and in place. So that would mean all of the appropriate plans are in place and documented, external stakeholder meetings, internal, the regional people coming in, working with the school, progress notes on plans, documented supports are there,
just a very robust, I would expect to see the most robust documentation before someone is expelled. And two out of the three times, I haven't seen that at all.
Wow. Because you do hear of these kids that bounce from school to school. And I was trying to figure out how that happened, because I didn't know how you could kick out somebody in your own catchment.
Yep.
And why a school would take a child that isn't in catchment that's been expelled elsewhere. Because I thought it was like my own region I have to look after. And if it's out of region, I don't. But that sounds like discretion-based again.
Yes.
I don't like the inconsistencies of it being discretion-based.
I know.
Anyway. Why do you think it often takes a crisis before any action actually happens?
I think in one respect, it's human nature. We don't make changes until we're forced to make changes.
Okay.
And we don't do it until we absolutely have to. I think a lot of school personnel are also completely taxed. They are inundated with all of these requirements that they have to do. And they triage, which I know talking to teacher friends, but I've done it myself. You triage what is the most important thing. And then these other things fall through the cracks sometimes, because essentially you have someone who's been shot through with a cannonball versus someone who has a paperclip cut.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense.
So if you just got scraped with a paperclip, then I can respond to you in 2 weeks. If you just got shot with a cannonball, you are gushing blood everywhere and it's impacting everyone and you're probably going to die. So I have to tend to it right now.
It's so funny though, because as a parent, I'm always like, okay, I know it's a paper cut now, but I can see it getting infected and then his whole hand is going to fall off.
Yep.
And he's going to just have one arm for the rest of his life.
Yep.
We should really grab onto this now. But the schools are waiting for the arm to be half torn off.
Yes.
Before they're really acting.
And I think that's partially because they don't have capacity to respond faster, because there's so much happening.
Yeah, and they're
reactive. And school is so dynamic that every day is a whole new world with these kids.
Oh, yeah. All right, final question, Sarah. What is the most, or what are some common advocacy mistakes that slip up or slow down parents in this process?
I think being too nice and assuming a school said to a parent, the parent told me this the other day, why are you asking questions? Just trust us. Don't trust the school. Don't trust them. Even if they're like the best school, we don't just blindly trust anyone. Like we don't trust Santa. We don't trust the tooth fairy. We can't just blindly trust school.
It's so funny. I went to this parent information meeting at the school. And they said, and like, I get the idea behind it, but my brain doesn't work like that.
So they said, look, with kids, sometimes we hear things about parents. So we hear that you left them at home and they went on their Xbox all day and whatever it is. And we always think the best of you. Can you make sure that if your child comes home and tells you something alarming about us, that you also trust us? And my head went straight to, if you are hearing something alarming that a parent is doing with a child, I think you should report them.
Yes.
Or speak to the parent, because what if it is an alarming thing? And what if they are playing Xbox all day and night and you went away and got drunk? Like, the teacher should check that if they're hearing alarming things. And then I was thinking, if I'm hearing alarming things, I'm going to be checking in, because maybe it is accurate information.
Yes.
And it was like, all the parents were looking around and nodding and looking, that's some good information. And I was thinking, no, that's terrible advice. What do you should trust anything about that? And then I was thinking, oh my God, Jane, it's like second day. It's second day here. You need to bring it down.
But it shows you too where your nervous system is setting with the school. And I refer to polyvagal ladder a lot for anybody listening who's into polyvagal theory. You are in fight flight. That
Straight
is
up.
Your mindset. You are ready. You're scanning the environment for there to be a problem. You're looking for the tiger to come out of the trees that you might not see. The wind blows a leaf and you think it's the tiger.
Oh, totally.
It might not be, but your system is programmed to believe that because of what you've experienced.
That's exactly right.
And I think parents, if you realize that about yourself, give yourself a little grace, because you are going to freak out about things that seem so reasonable and nice to everyone else.
Yeah, and then sometimes when you're comparing yourself to those parents, it's like that parent has had a different experience because they have a different child.
Yes.
And they may have an experience of, oh, I had a question one time, it was answered quickly. That's nice for you.
Yes.
Because you don't have the same experience of school.
Yes.
So you can feel a little bit like, because you're the only one or one of the only that is in fight or flight straight up, right?
Yes.
And everyone else is just nodding and smiling. It was a lovely time. And I was sitting there like just sirens in my head.
Yes.
Like, they're asking us to trust them blindly. That is a bad idea.
And I think this is part of, which I was talking about last episode, that cycle of institutions collapsing. Mm-hmm. People aren't blindly trusting institutions anymore. Mm-hmm. And we've been shown we can't.
That's exactly right. And with that, we will finish up. This has been such a great episode series with you, Sarah. I know how busy you are and how under the pump you are. So I really thank you for all of your time. If anyone would like to find out more about Sarah, anything that she does, I'm going to put all of the information about her and all of her social media into the show notes, and you can reach out to her directly. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we finish?
I have a bunch of resources on my website that parents can access. Most of them are free, and infographics, things that they could print out, send to the school, give the school more information. Keeps around behavior. I take a nervous system approach to behavior, a neuroscience-based approach. So it's very neuroaffirming. It does not use behaviorist practices. I have that there. That is an amazing resource because schools are still entrenched in behaviorism. If parents need something, I'm happy for them to reach out to me. Do you know anything about this? Do you have resources on this? I'm happy to send them what I have. Or in some cases, I make resources for the school. That, I don't advertise that. That's not on my website. But if parents need, that's a part of the services I provide when we're working together.
Great. Thank you so much. If anyone would like any of Sarah's resources, I'm going to check it out myself as well. And thank you so much for your time, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. I'm so happy to be here.
That's today's episode. Thank you for listening. If you want that same podcast energy in a reading form, the ADHD Mum Shop is there on the website. See you next week.